This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Label Clothing Company. They have been a huge supporter of mine for many years now. And anytime you see me wearing a dress shirt or a suit, it is from them. Everything is custom made. And anyone who knows me knows I hate wearing suits and I hate wearing dress shirts. I not only look dapper, but the clothes feel great and wear really well. So anyone in the need of a custom suit, definitely hit them up. You can find them online at label.co. What is up, everybody? Today, I am joined by Erica from Tinsel Design. What a great guest. We got into how to build a brand and really how to stand out in the market by offering something different. Erica does really, really cool stuff, and it's completely out of the box. And she is an expert at experiential design and creating an environment that is completely different than anyone's ever seen before. And she has some amazing clients, including Spotify. So Erica gives us some insight on how to build those clients and some of the adversity and all the ups and downs she's gone through to get to where she is. So without further ado, I bring you Erica. What is up, everybody? Today, I'm joined by none other than my new friend, Erica from Tinsel Events. And Erica and I quickly met at Engage. And it was funny, since Engage, I've had about five or six people be like, yo, you have to have Erica on the show. So here we are.
Nice.
And I've gotten to get to know you a little bit better throughout this whole process and get to know your story a little bit better, which I'm so interested in talking to you about. But first and foremost, if you kindly would please introduce everyone.
Yeah, yourself. Of course. Hi, everybody. I want to get those names later from those five people.
I will. Yeah, for sure.
My name is Erica Taylor Haskins, and I'm one of the co-founders of Tinsel Experiential Design.
Cool.
Based here in New York. We're the agency formerly known as Tinsel and Twine. We do experiential immersive experiences, both for corporate and brand clients like a Spotify, Anheuser-Busch, Samsung, L'Oreal, as well as social and private events, weddings. Really, our niche there is clients that are looking for a social event that feels more like a brand experience, maybe more like a fashion party, more like an influencer dinner. And we kill it.
Cool.
So
I love it.
More hot pink than blushing bashful. So
this
is the cheesy tagline.
So apparently you had a tattoo artist at one of your events, which
And
someone was like, I got tattooed at one of Erica's parties. I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, I'm all for like tattoos. I have some. But I was like, at a party? They were like, oh yeah, in front of everybody.
Anthony, you're coming next year. That's where that one's from.
Maybe I'll get a triangle somewhere. You know?
That's funny. So it's an industry event that we do called the 11th House.
Yes.
For the House of Aquarius, because Liz, Adette, and I, my two business partners, are all Aquariuses.
Okay. Yes.
And the House of Aquarius is the house of friendship and partners and community and groups and celebrating. It's perfect,
how
right?
Beautiful.
And so we did it last year and had a tattoo artist, and it was such a hit. Literally right after that, people were like, can I sign up for next year? And we were like, well, we weren't going to do it again.
Gotcha.
Like, you did it once.
It was like a one-off hit,
right? Yeah. And they were like, no. So this year when we did it, we had two artists because it was such a hit. Literally already, people are like, can I sign up for next year? So I guess it's become a thing. Everyone's going to do it.
That's what I heard about Erica's tattoo
part. Yeah, we like to have fun.
So you and I, we spoke briefly and kind of just got into like the framework of how your business started, where you're from and all that jazz, right? So to get into it, right? 2010 is when we started Tinsel.
Yeah.
Where did the concept and the idea come from? And then more importantly, what I really like about what you're doing is you play in the social space, but you've really, to when you talk about experiential marketing, something that is near and dear to me is I feel that over the next 5 years going forward, if you do not create an experience for your clients, you're not going to have any fucking clients because you're going to be out of business. And that's the truth is, you know, right now we're in such a state where if you're producing the same thing over and over, that's not what a client wants anymore.
Yeah.
They want something that's so out of the box and so experiential.
Yeah.
And you guys have seized that market, obviously doing some really cool stuff, including having people get tattooed at your parties. So where did that start? Where did it come from?
And so company's 9 years old, my background, and then my business partner, Adette, we're both in advertising.
Okay.
Liz was a science teacher until she figured out that she liked science, but not so much kids. And doing that quarter life crisis thing of New York
City.
Is that
a real quarter life?
I mean, I coined that on the trademark. But, you know, when you're in your late
20s. I'm almost 40. I'm going through my midlife right now, not you.
We're all sweet 16 in our hearts, really. But, you know, in our late 20s and just at happy hour and being like, oh, shit, I don't like what I'm doing. And I would look at especially the older women in the advertising in the industry and be like, I don't want that life. I don't want to work 29 hours a day. I want to have a family eventually. I want to date. I was like, just step one. I want to date someone, but I work a lot. I just wasn't feeling inspired. So we were all out at cocktails as we were longtime friends. And Liz had just planned her wedding. These were in the days before Pinterest and Instagram, when you really had visibility into what other people were doing, unless it was like your cousin's wedding, right? So at that time, Liz had a really badass wedding. You know, she, for people that know Liz, she's covered in tattoos, probably about 20 hours worth of tattoos and bleached blonde hair and piercing. So she just is like, she looks like a cool, like badass girl that would probably kick her ass. She's a teddy bear. But, you know, and her husband was really into art. So he illustrated their invitations to look like a graphic novel. And their whole wedding just felt really rock and roll, really rockabilly, just really edgy. And so we were at happy hour, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to do this for other people? We could like own this niche of doing really cool, different weddings and aren't just beautiful, not just, you know, a ton of roses and candles. So that's what we sought out to do. It started on top of our day jobs, nights and weekends. We'd meet on Tinsel Tuesday and do really cute things, like build a website that didn't have any photos on it because we didn't have any photos.
I wish I could come up with cute ideas like that.
Tinsel Tuesday, really cute, adorable. You know, having tacos on a Tuesday. And when we first started, it was a big adventure of figuring out how to run a business, what even was our business, on top of learning this industry that none of us really had experience in, which is maybe not the best way to start a business, but we did. And the three of us are all classic overachievers, type A people. So when we seek to do something, when we decide to do something, we really do it and do it all the way. So that was 9 years ago. There's a whole lot that happened in between, obviously. But now 9 years later, we've got a great, you know, small but mighty team of 10 people based in Brooklyn and doing some really big, fun, exciting events.
Which is cool, because I always say, like, people look at the finished product, right? So we're sitting here talking in 2019, you know, it's 10 years later. And I think that's always a good, 10 years, I think, is a good benchmark to gauge the health and success of a business. You know, people think everyone wants everything overnight. Not realistic, right? So you've put your 10 years in, and now you can kind of say, hey, I have a successful platform, right? But in order to get to us sitting here having this conversation, I like to say that proverbially you have to eat some shit in between, in between here and there, right? A whole lot of shit. Where was that for you, right? So 2010, you're working a day job, 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Afterwards,
I mean,
events.
Do you speak to some of those milestone low moments?
Yeah.
I mean, when we got to 2012, we got to the point where we were like, this could be a thing, could be a viable business. We had somehow wooed enough clients that actually wanted to hire us, definitely weren't charging enough. So we were working really hard, working crazy hours, and became a hobby that kind of gave us some money, but not enough to be a full, full thing.
For sure.
But we started thinking about what that transition plan looked like. So at that point, the plan was for me to go full time, since I really drove a lot of our sales at that point, a lot of our partnerships and outreach. And then Adette was going to go full time because she was driving our brand and our website and what the voice and visual output of our brand looked like. And then Liz was going to finish her school year and do that thing, you know, teach the kids. But in November 2012, I got laid off and was kind of like, huh. a slight moment of panic, but then also like kind of took it as a sign from the universe that it was time to see where this would go. And then weirdly, Adette got laid off from her day job 3 months later. And we were like, shit, let's do this. But again, you know, took it as a sign and never, I mean, not to say we never look back. We definitely look back at certain points.
Well, I think and anyone who says they never look back.
Yeah, definitely. I still look back every now and again, now and again in the rear view. But, you know, I think there were definitely moments over those 9-10 years or so. I mean, 2015 was a tough, tough year where the summer we just, whatever reason, weren't landing contracts and again, working really hard chasing things.
So
and
it was like
not,
a midpoint of where we are between start to finish.
It felt like a big make or break moment of, you know, is this something that we want to keep doing? Does it make sense? You know, at that point, it really did feel like, you know, we could either turn back to what we were doing and that would be okay, or we could just push just that extra bit further and see what happens. And we did keep pushing. It was hard. It, you know, every day it's the hardest best thing, but
I think to what you're saying though, is if you don't push through that the rest of your life, you look back on that.
Yeah. Like what could have been.
Yeah. It's that what could have been moment where, especially when you're younger, it's like, what do you have to lose at this point?
Yeah.
Typically I feel like the 9 to 5s for the most part are going to be there.
Yeah.
But if you didn't the rest of your life, you're looking back going, oh shit, I could have, would have, should have maybe. And you did it.
So. You never know what opportunities are coming around.
For sure.
I mean, you know, again, not to say it was easy, but once we decided to keep trying just a little bit longer, things started manifesting. We met new people that really helped turbo boost the business.
What was the tipping point?
A big turning point for us. So when we first started Tinsel, and again, this was the days we were Tinsel and Twine.
No, we're just Tinsel, yeah.
Cute. But we were in weddings and wedding adjacent events and doing pretty low budget.
Sure.
I mean, great clients and we learned a lot. It helped us grow up.
Sure.
But we're doing things that were a little cheap and cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like the way that sounds.
It's cheap and cheerful. No, we hate the way that sounds. We do not like that.
We all started there.
Four-letter words. Yeah. But so when we pivoted and started tapping into our networks from advertising life, again, I couldn't even tell you why people decided to bet on us, but we said all the best words. And then started landing corporate clients where it was big learnings. We were making a lot more money. Faster timelines, doing repeat business, being able to work with the same clients multiple times a year, being able to count
Spotify.
On that.
Yep. So, how many launch events are they doing a year? I mean,
we
hundreds probably.
I literally always knock on wood. We do their big summer and holiday party every year. That's for 1,700 people. Yeah. It's a big, complex, massive machine. And then throughout the year, several marketing things, experiential, et cetera. But it just helped us grow up really fast. Like, kicked us into gear in a big, big way. Yeah. We really had to tighten up our processes, had to really depend on our team to make us look good because it couldn't just be the three of us. We would literally tear our hair out. So once we got into that and doing more and more corporate, we actually stepped away from weddings and social events. That really was our turning point because we were able to make the money that we needed to. It made us really focus on building the business, not just doing creative work. We are known for doing really fun, creative stuff like tattoos and getting weird that way. But on the inside, the thing that our clients really come to us for is our processes. Mm. Like we're at the end of the day, we're again, like
we got 3 GW grads.
We're pretty smart. And pretty systems based. And that allows us to, on the outside, look more free form and like chill because on the inside, we're like manically building this thing and building this machine.
And I don't think if you're going to work with those kind of clients, if you don't have the ability to execute, they're not going to be repeat clients.
No,
because
I mean,
at that corporate
right
level,
away.
They have so much money
and
they themselves wouldn't be in the position they are. Well, I take that back. Some corporations are disasters anyway and they're successful. When they're working with someone, they want to know that. Shit's going to be seamless.
Mm-hmm. And I think on both ends, I mean, both social clients and corporate, the whole gig is to make someone's life easier. You know, like no one wants to hire you to make it more complicated or to have to chase you. And I'm actually always really confused, perplexed when we work with vendors that we have to chase. I'm like, we should all get it by now. You know, when you've got to a certain tier.
And I've been talking about this. I've been talking about this a lot lately, and the problem I think currently at the moment with our industry is, you know, the market's just been flooded by so many people who are event planners. I'm sure you see too. You know, there's too much of everything right now, and ultimately that course will correct itself once the economy dips down. People will wind up shifting into different. Out of this industry into other things.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. I mean, the level of inefficiency and unprofessionalism I see on events sometimes, I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, and it's scary, but I feel like this is one industry where you can get away with a lot of that, whereas in other industries that wouldn't necessarily be tolerated.
Yeah. Especially for your social clients. I mean, for the most part, it's maybe their one and only time getting married.
Yes.
And so their first time going through it and they don't know better. They don't know what, you know, the benchmarks are, what the standards are.
Sure.
So, I mean, not that it should be all of our jobs to teach them and to kind of be unified that way, but it is, it's our job to teach them.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully they go away and they're like, that was actually a really fun,
of course,
fun experience and not the stressful thing that it could be when you're like trying to chase your vendors, just trying to get an answer on something, trying to like count your coins, you know?
Of course, of course. So you mentioned something before, right? You said you were a classic overachiever, right? So I'm always curious. I mean, I feel like I'm an overachiever and I know where my overachieving comes from. But what inspires me and kind of what I love to get into with people is where they're inspiration, their drive comes from. So where fill us in, Erica, where's that come from?
I mean, it's a funny thing, especially when that just has been your personality for so long, to take a step back and think about the why. I'm like, that's just how I am. That's how I've always been since I was 5 years old, you know, got an A+ on my horse drawing. But you know, for us, you know, Liz, Adette and I, we've known each other for a long, long time. And we've always been those kids that, you know, were part of all the clubs and we were in chorus and we were in drama and we were in the honor society and all that. And, you know, I think part of it is being a woman, you know, especially a woman in New York City and in an industry where we're just starting out and representing people that look like us that way. I mean, most of our team, we're almost all women based. We have a couple of guys that we let slip in every now and again.
We're not all, we're not all bad.
You know,
men are all, I mean,
I have very high standards. Even guys can be part of the sisterhood. But piece of that too, I mean, you know, obviously as a person of color and, you know, Adette is a first generation immigrant, Liz is second generation on both sides. And I do, I think that there is something to making sure that your parents and your family's sacrifices are worth it. And it's, again, something that it's so part of my story and my narrative that I don't often think of it on, you know, a top of mind level like that, you know, but it manifests in certain ways.
I mean, you mentioned something to me before, just when we were chatting, that your mom was in the first integrated class in Richmond, Virginia. And I can't help but think that, you know, as your mom was raising you, there had to be some influence there that, you know, A, my daughter will never have to go through that. But B, more importantly, like, she was raising a strong woman.
Yeah.
You know, and that, and now obviously we see that here.
Definitely. I mean, that's sacrifice.
A direct,
for sure.
I mean, that's some shit that I think even in today's fucked up day and age, we don't necessarily like wrap our heads around that as much. You know,
I think, I mean, people either just aren't mindful of it or there's a little bit of, you know, willful ignorance there that it's so, so recent, you know, as recent, like you said, my mom was the first integrated class,
only a generation ago,
all of her classes from elementary school through college, and having to prove her worth and prove her seat at the table or her place in the room. I mean, again, she was, you know, always a great student. She was on the cheering squad. She was in drama and really being excellent in everything she did. Same thing. I mean, my dad didn't have the exact same experience. He went to segregated schools because he's a little bit older. But, you know, working in finance and being usually one of only brown faces in any given room, and especially something as conservative and traditional as finance, and being able, you have to, you know your shit inside and out, especially when you're representing that certain profile. My grandparents went to college, which again, you know, people take for granted. I'm like, my grandparents were born in the 1920s and 30s. Like, it's important that they went to college.
A lot of people back then didn't go to college, period.
No, I mean, so especially for black and brown people. So again, for me, it was growing up. I was like, there was no even question that I was going to college. That's just what you did. And not only do you go, but you are killing it. You're doing great. And then what you do afterwards really matters. So it's a funny thing. It's something that we think about, you know, when we talk about why do we do this? Why do we do this crazy business? Like, events are fun. They're beautiful. We get to do a lot of really exciting things, but it's stressful, as you know. I mean, it's what top six stressful industry that you can
be in.
There's a crazy list. It's like bomb detonator, firefighter, event professionals.
Okay. I believe
that. Don't you feel that when you go to sleep? As I do when you don't sleep. But, you know, we talk about that.
Like, there's things for that, like CBD.
And other substances. Trust me. The monthly subscription that comes to our office. But we talk about that. Like, why do we do this? Why do we put ourselves through it?
And see, but I look at it and I see you and I think no matter what you decided to do, you'd be successful at it.
I think so.
I know. It just becomes, do you want to be successful at that point?
And like, what is the thing? You know, what have you put your mind towards?
Correct.
And again, that's kind of been my MO for everything in life. But that means I always get what I want. It's my husband. My husband likes to joke. I always get my way
and
I always get what I want. It's not a joke.
No, not a joke.
But it's true. I mean, when I decide that I want something, and whether that's business, if it's I want to go on a certain vacation, I want to make a certain amount of money, you know, even as you were talking about our dogs, I decided I wanted to get a dog. I was like, well, I'm going to get one. I'm going to get the one that I want. And I'm going to get it. You know, it's just going to be great. But it all goes back to that. And, you know, to take it back, what we were talking about very seriously, you know, we talk about that why, and it is, it's being something that someone else can look to, that, you know, girls and women that look like us and, you know, whether, you know, it could be guys and whatever that profile looks like, if they see something in us,
of course,
that, you know, they identify with and are like, cool, they did it, so I can do it, you know?
And it's really true. Important, I mean, to us. As messed up as people want to say the United States is right now, it's still one of the only, if not the only country in the world where you can come here, well, if you can get in, you can come here you can come here and make a life for yourself. Whereas in other countries, that those things aren't even on the table.
Yeah.
So we take so much of that for granted, where in, you know, many places, it's not even an option.
Yeah.
So I find that not focusing on any of that bullshit, just getting after it and then leaving all that to the side is what's really the key important. Because then you can use that as a crutch or as an excuse to say, oh, the current political climate or the current economic climate, they're just, in my opinions, that's just, that's the, you're out, right?
Yeah. There's no excuses.
You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
Because now you have the excuse. Oh, I failed because of who our president is, or I failed because we're in a recession. Bullshit. My best years of growth were 08 to 2010 because everyone else was so fucking depressed worrying about the world coming to an end.
I
just doubled down and worked harder.
Yeah. Well, that, or it's, you know, your success despite what's going on. Like,
correct.
I love that MO, you know, when you're fighting against uphill battles or, you know, whatever currents there are. I'm like, I love succeeding in hard atmospheres. Mm. That's the best kind of success, you know?
And for sure. And I think, you know, and I also think too, it goes to the mindset of until, like so many people say, if I make it or if I do this, it's not if you do it, well, you probably won't. It's until you do it.
Yeah.
Right. Cause then there's out. There's the
when you make it.
When you make it.
Yeah.
Because now that once you preface it, I feel like with any of that other bullshit, you've now given yourself the mental excuse to fail. Whereas when you say, I'm going to do this until it becomes something, now you've put yourself in a situation where you have made it impossible to not get
your
goal is.
Totally. And again, I mean, one advantage that we've had, my partners and I, again, talking in the royal we, that we've had, is we're the kind of people that aren't ever satisfied with where we are, which, you know, it's important to take a moment to pause and appreciate what you've built around you. But I think there's something to be said of looking at what's next. You know, we talk about that of, you know, growing into a new shell. And then once you hit that shell and you're claustrophobic and you're feeling really angsty and ready to go to the next thing, you know, we're the kind of people that are always looking ahead and looking at that 3-year, that 5-year, 10-year, 20-year plan. Like, what are we growing towards? And not ever being happy with, okay, cool, we've made it for whatever that means. And it's hard. I mean, right now we're in this weird growing pains moment where we've built this team and we've got really great people and processes and, you know, decent amount of repeat clients. But every time we grow and every time we bring on new people, you're like, oh, shit, we need to make more money and do like the next big thing. And what is that thing?
And growth is
hard.
And growth is hard. You know, people just see growth and they don't see what comes with it. So people, you know, see what we do here. And at least in my business sometimes, and they see, oh, you went from here to here. And I'm like, yeah, but as we grew, my expenses grew with that. Right now I'm responsible for 8 full-time people in my office.
Right.
We do 3 weddings, you know, we can do up to 3 weddings a day. So I have the teams out in the field. So the expenses have grown exponentially as well. So you have to keep all those things in mind.
Uh-huh.
Like, it wasn't just growth, tons of money in the bank.
Yeah.
No, it was growth, a lot of pain as you grow too. Because now you're taking on the responsibility of, you know, where you started off with you and your 3 partners, I had 6, you're responsible for 10 lives.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at it that way, it's a completely different dynamic than saying, oh, we just grew. No, you're now taking on the responsibility to make sure you can pay these people.
Totally.
And now you need to have the business to make sure you can pay them.
Exactly. I mean, there is luckily only one instance where, like, early on, when it was just the 3 of us, we had 1 month where we have to pause on paying ourselves because their money just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So thankfully only that one time, but we think about that. I'm like, if whatever happened and we couldn't pay our team, like that can't be a thing.
Yeah. Well, then when that happens, you don't get paid. And that's, you know, like, no seriousness, as an entrepreneur, I feel like you have a moral obligation. Team gets paid first, you get paid last.
Yeah.
You know, now that you can look at that a number of ways, but you can't be paying yourself and not paying your team.
Yeah.
So you're the one who eats last.
No.
You know, and I always say, like, I don't know, are you familiar with Simon Sinek?
Yeah.
Like Simon Sinek, you know, like you're the last, like the entrepreneur is the last one to eat, right? Mm-hmm. The great leader is the one who is, you know, like yesterday I asked my staff, I asked part of my team to come in on Sunday and I stayed with them the entire day. And it would have been a lot easier for me to just leave and have them do the work. But I have goals and deadlines that we literally needed to meet. So I sucked it up on my Sunday after working 16 hours on Saturday and we were here till 9 o'clock last night.
Yeah.
But like, that's just the shit you still have to do. And totally. People look back and it's funny. I get more comments now about how good I have it. I'm like, good. I work more now than when I work more now at 38 than I did when I was 21 because more is expected of, you know, when you go show up to a job with Spotify, there's lots expected now. It's not like you're looking for a local radio station. You're working for a multi-billion dollar, multinational conglomerate.
High stakes. Definitely.
Right?
High visibility, high stakes.
And then who at that party is going to be there that might see what you do, good or bad, that might be your next legacy Spotify.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know who that is, man.
Totally.
Maybe the president of Sony is like, oh shit. Whoever did this party, I need to do our next launch.
And I mean, those events, you know, when we do events like that, that are so big and so complex and so many moving pieces, I've had friends talk to us and be like, it must be so easy at this point because we've done it so many times and you kind of have it down. I'm like, yeah, we kind of know what to expect, but any little thing, I mean, something as little as the bar ran out of ice or they don't have enough cups or whatever that thing, the sound
goes wrong.
That's the thing that people will talk about, you know, like the thing that goes wrong is always the thing that sticks with people unless you can fix it and make it right.
Which I think is a problem too, because like, I think just human brains are always willing to go to the negative bias instead of staying, you could have this amazing event, one little thing goes wrong and that's what they focus in on. And it's not necessarily, I feel like the right way to have perspective and look at some of this stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, it's a hard thing. We go to so many industry events and I love that part of the job. And actually a funny exercise that Liz Adette and I do is every 2 months or so, we do kind of a diagnostic list of like, what are the things that you really love about the business? What are the things that you don't want to do and you want off your plate? And in April, I was like, I feel like I'm spending my whole life redlining contracts. And I hate redlining contracts. It makes me go cross-eyed looking at legalese and words. And Liz was like, I love doing it. Like, it's like a weird like puzzle. And I love trying to figure it out and like going back and forth. So I was like, God bless, please take all my contracts. And when it came to my point of talking about what I love, I was like, I really love going to cocktail parties and like going to the dance parties and hanging out with my friends in the industry. And, you know, as fun as Liz and Adette are, they were like, I hate going to that. I get such agita talking to people. And I don't know what to talk about. And I was like, I feel like I'm gaming the system. But if you want to take my contracts and I can go to networking parties, we're good. And that's why we have a great partnership. But all that being said, is there's this weird dynamic sometimes at networking parties where our industry peers are hosting all of our friends and people sit there because we're all used to looking at the details and looking at the mechanics and the cogs of an event. People point out the things that like could have been optimized or changed.
Sure.
And it's a weird thing. I don't know. I try to like turn off that part of my brain and just find the dance floor.
I think it just gets back to people have lost like touch with being present in any given moment.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause we're always looking for like what's better, what's worse, picking out things. Whereas like if you're actually just in the moment having a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Do away with all this. Alcohol always helps.
Yeah, it always helps.
So when growing up in your household, right? So I'm assuming a lot was demanded of you. Fair to say?
You know what?
Or no?
No, I mean, there's kind of this inherent goal setting and being goal oriented. And again, not a pressure to be the best, but maybe even self-imposed. Actually, I can't say that there was a lot demanded of me. I feel like I got away with a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Expected?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it just became so much part of my personality and my, I don't know, not to say my brand as a high schooler, because that's weird and Instagrammy, but my brand as a high schooler was just being really involved. And, you know, I gave back to my school a lot. I was always like a freshman orientation leader in high school and college and did panels trying to get people excited about being at the school and school spirit and all that. So my parents just kind of let me do that. You know, they were always supportive. And
what did they think about when you opened your business?
I think when I opened the business, my dad, probably more than anyone, was nervous, you know, I think
typical finance. Like
You know, there's a certain security in going the traditional route and having a salary job and benefits and all that. So, you know, when I had that quote unquote good job in advertising. He was like, well, why would you leave that and, you know, do this unknown weird thing that you don't have experience in, you don't really know anyone in this industry, kind of. It was, you know, on paper he was probably right, but in practice, I wouldn't trade it. They're hard days, but it's such a fun adventure that we've gone on. I think my mom got to a point where she was like, she's going to do whatever the hell she wants to do. So just let her do it.
Own it. What are the struggles you guys are faced with now? Obviously you've grown substantially.
Yeah.
Right? And what are the,
Anthony, current struggles. Again, I mentioned we've got a really awesome team. So in any given day, there's probably 10 of us in the office. And then we have a couple of project-based people or what we call our professionals, like our bookkeeper, accountant, et cetera. But managing people is the hardest thing. It's so hard. Never. Making sure that people feel like they've got the tools that they need. When sometimes things just, you know, it's in my brain, right? Or like it feels so natural and inherent and like a given, but having to communicate that in a way that feels like an official system and like, this is the policy. This is the way that we do something. Yep. Not just me like saying words at someone because that's how I feel in the moment. Again, making sure that people have an opportunity to feel like they're growing. Often people come to us and they either have the skill set exactly of what they need, or most often they're, you know, growing into a role. So how do you get them up to speed quickly, but to a place where they don't feel like, great, I've checked these boxes and now I want the next thing? Because we're just not built to like, you know, accelerate people that way. Once we get people up to speed, I'm like, great, so do that thing now for the business.
Of course.
For a while. And again, just growing our team, and we've grown really quickly. A lot of times we figure out that we need policies in place the hard way. You know, we figure out something bad happened or something negative happened and had bad implications. And we're like, oh, we probably should have had that thing written down as a rule that, you know.
I mean, I think it's too, like, you could write all these rules down and all that stuff, you know, and especially now, like, it's funny, in the past year, the government sent me like 15 posters to post in the kitchen.
All the posters.
I firmly believe that I agree with all the things that are said on those posters. Having posters up does not change those things from happening.
Right.
It just lets people know that it's illegal.
Yeah.
Right. But for us, for me at least, I think building the right company core culture and selecting people that you bring in, because ultimately, I don't like using the word family because you can't fire family members. I think team is a much better structure. Whereas, it's a business relationship. Yes, it's very conditional. Whereas I love everyone who works here, but there is a hierarchy. There's an owner, there's a VP, production manager, and people we bring in. And one thing I've noticed, at least for us, is as I've done a better job of hiring and incorporating into my team, it auto corrects the company culture. So the rules don't need to be there. Somebody shows up dressed incorrectly, I don't have to tell Sylvia, yo, what the fuck are they wearing today? I'll text her and be like, yo, can you deal with that for me? And she's like, already done.
Yeah.
Because she knows. It's already there. Yeah. So the company auto corrects itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, or there's a problem arises.
Yeah.
Well, the problem affects everyone on the team, right? So then it comes down to, If she knows that's going to affect her job, ultimately it auto corrects.
Yeah.
Like the ship automatically steers. And hey, sometimes it goes off course and you need to have a massive implosion and fire some people and all that shit. And that's fine. But when you have the core, when your core team is so tight and so good, and this took me 20 years to figure out, it is a game changer for what you can do with your business.
Yeah.
Because without the right group of people, you are only as good as your weakest team member.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that.
No, totally. I mean, we're big into business books and theory. Yep. And Adette actually just got back from this crazy intensive program at Harvard Business School.
Nice. I love her.
That's when I go to Engage and hang out with everyone and I'm learning, but she goes to Harvard
business mastery and all that stuff with Tony Robbins. And, some people give me shit for it, but, you know, it's super important because just to be around other people that have done great things, it opens your mind up to say, okay, hey, maybe I'm doing something that I could be doing differently.
Well, we strongly believe you can't just be good at your craft in events. I mean, you can't just be an amazing photographer, right?
Correct.
You can't just be
that's 10%
of what
planner.
I do. Yeah. You know, you have to run a good business and be a good business person. And I know you've had a couple of guests recently talk about that. And amen.
No, because people don't fucking get it. It's like, you know, people go, oh, you're a photographer. if you actually look at my calendar,
I own a business.
And I shoot, let's say I shoot 35 events a year. That's 350 hours of actual photo taking time.
Right.
Now, I worked 70 hours last week, which is a fifth of that total number that I shot weddings in 1 week. There's 52 weeks a year. Now, granted, I don't maintain 70 hours a week, but it's taking pictures is fractional. I run a business. And part of what I do is take pictures.
Right.
I run production. I have a staff, payroll, accounting, business growth,
that's marketing. That's a deliverable, but the business.
That's the business. Yeah. So the easy part is going and taking pictures. That just shows up. I can do that with my eyes closed at this point.
Totally.
But it's all the other things. And the one thing in the business I always say is there's a lot of people in our industry are hobbyists because they're not actually making money, right? So in a capitalist system, it is to make for profit, right? We're not here doing this charitable work, especially on the weekends.
No.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, they may be bringing in revenue, but they're not actually producing a profit at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big differentiator. And I'm going to keep saying it. Like, there's a huge difference between obviously a fun hobby and running an actual business.
And being able to project it. I mean, being able to make some money here and there, and some months might be higher than others, but unless you can predict it and have a model that's scalable and repeatable, it's not really a business. It's a little bit of a gamble. You know, just kind of throwing something at the wall, and maybe sometimes it sticks. Sometimes you get a check in the mail and that's great. But it's been important for us to build a business that we can say, great, we know in the month of August, we're going to make somewhere between X and Y dollars because that's what our business is modeled after. You know?
You know, you get a company summer retreat and you, know, you might run three of those and you have the repeat business. You can start to say, hey, that's going to be a consistent income.
Or how to course correct, like something went wrong for whatever reason, God bless, whatever.
No, but, you know, like, this drives me fucking crazy is that people don't talk about shit fucking up. Like, things go wrong all the time.
Yeah.
And we live in this like Instagrammable fantasy. And it's it's so inaccurate from what the truth is, because we only portray
these the like
it's a highlight reel of your life.
Yeah.
Like, some days just suck.
I know.
Sometimes shit goes wrong. Yeah. Sometimes clients suck. I mean, like, you know, clients suck sometimes.
Yeah.
There's no way around that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to fire people. Sometimes you have a bad day. Sometimes you don't get enough sleep. Like, all those things factor into sometimes shit just sucks.
I know.
But you still have to show it.
Yeah.
And what I found is the easiest course correction for that is consistency.
Yeah.
Right. When it sucks, show up. When it's great, show up. When it's okay, show up. And most people don't. Right? They quit somewhere in between okay and sucking.
Yeah.
And they never come back.
Yeah.
So as long as you can consistently be there.
Yeah.
You know, people don't remember Michael Jordan's missed more game-winning shots than anyone else.
Yeah.
He's also hit more game-winning shots. But people don't remember any of the ones he missed. And neither does he, if you ask him. And he talks about it openly. He's taken more attempts. If he didn't take those attempts, he never would have had those successes, right?
Yeah.
Same thing with any great athlete.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and it's another for us.
And it's funny. I mean, we talk about that too with Instagram and what that whole voice and world looks like. I mean, we, you know, you can't show all the bad stuff because you don't get the likes. You don't get the engagement when you're like, here's me in the fetal position back of house when someone's been really mean to me. But at the same time, we try to be really real and voice when, you know what, this has been a hard week. And like, you know, our emails are crazy right now. We're really stressed out. Clients are being crazy. We talk a lot about Mercury retrograde for what that's worth, because sometimes it's really, really, really hard. And we've had people respond really well to that. And people are like, shit, I'm so glad you said that because I'm having a really, really tough time. Even the people that, you know, that I aspire to, I've got people that I lovingly stalk and love and aspire to, that I've taken this practice of kind of like just shooting them a note when I'm thinking about them, which might be creepy because sometimes it's really often in weird hours, but I'll just shoot a note to be like, I was really admiring this thing that you did, or I'm really glad that you said that thing because it got me thinking. And more often than not, they'll write back to be like, I'm so, so happy and grateful for this note because I was having a shitty day.
I had a good friend of mine on, Liz Savetsky, and she's a, she's an influencer and blogger and fashion stylist, right? And I love her. And I feel like, you know, in that influencer world, there is they've really done a great job at creating perfection, right?
Yeah.
But she had three miscarriages 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And she spoke openly about it on her platform and in hopes of helping other women who had been through similar circumstances. She got hate mail from it, saying that she was using her miscarriages to gain. I'm like, listen, that's like, there's some heavy stuff.
She went through
not one, but three miscarriages in 1 year. For her to be open, I'm like, actually, how about we give her props?
Right.
She actually spoke. she's the only person I've seen that's actually dropped anything truthful.
Yeah.
Like, that was her life. Like, there were days she didn't want to get out of bed, and people got mad at her for talking about that. How about maybe there was another woman at home who was going through the hormonal changes, the fact that they didn't want to get out of bed, the fact that maybe they didn't want to go on with life that day. I mean, we're talking about, like, you know, it gets heavy, but that's the truth. And that's the reality of the situation, whereas we've gotten so far detached from that.
Yeah.
We live these perfect little Instagram worlds. You know, I think at the times that has a huge detraction, and especially in the event industry. It's so funny. People are like constantly like, and I know people who do it, like, and I'm like, dude, that event was from 5 years ago. They're not busy. You know, they're just pretending to be busy.
Regurgitating.
Yeah, regurgitating content just for content's sake. And I think
it's a weird machine to feed. And I get it. I mean, I get it. And I in tandem with one of our team members, Alexa, run our Instagram account. And I feel like 79% of the time I'm really into it, and it's a fun outlet, and it's almost like a personal diary for the business.
Of course,
and you know, it's Axis's own blog, as we all know. And then the other balance of the time, I'm like, this is terrible. And I don't have anything to say. I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to like anyone's anything. Because sometimes it feels really forced, or like, I just want to have a weekend and I don't want to like scroll through Instagram, even though I know that's going to help the algorithm. It's a weird thing. And I'm actually really curious to see what comes next. Like, what's the next?
I think people are going to be shocked. You know, I think Instagram at some point is going to reframe how likes and followers work.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to see those publicly.
Yeah.
And
they've talked about it.
They're talking about it.
Coming.
But, you know, it, to a certain degree, I think it'll start to make sense at a certain point. You know, and it'll be a huge disruptor for influencers, because really what is, you know, and for me, it really bothers me personally. And I'll tell you why. How many followers you have means absolutely nothing to how good or successful your business is. It just means you have that many people following you, which the term in and of itself, follower, is weird.
Yeah.
Because I actually don't follow anybody on Instagram in that sense, you know.
Just looking at their stuff.
I just look at their shit, or their life.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I actually think it would be good, because it's been an interesting, I've had my own real life test on how much bullshit Instagram can be. So we've gotten blown off so much since we started the show from having guests on. And it really comes down to simply this, right? I have 14,000 followers on my main platform and 200 on the actual show platform. Uh-huh. People see the 200, they go, I'm not going to waste my fucking time with that. Now, what they don't realize is that we email out these episodes to 6,000 people in the event industry. So when you're on here, everyone who we work with is going to see you on here. So it's free. You know, you know what I mean? Like,
Name the names, Anthony.
It's so short-sighted, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, it's motivation to say, hey, I'm going to keep doing this until it becomes legitimate. But I had somebody tell me they wouldn't want to come on because parking was $28 downstairs. I'm like, bro, you're not willing to invest $28 for an hour?
Get on the subway, baby.
Yeah, or whatever it is, but make it happen.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking, like, I've dropped $5,000 on stupid shit sometimes and it hasn't worked. $30, I'm all in.
Oh my God.
But I've seen that influence on people's mindset, where it's like, or people want to surround themselves with people who have a lot of followers, thinking that it's going to have like
amplify.
Some magical voodoo.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work that way either.
Yeah.
Look, the bottom line is, if you're great at what you do, whether you have a fucking huge following on Instagram or not, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
And that's,
for sure.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Because there's people who don't have big Instagram followers that I know that make a lot of money.
And there are people that I know that have huge Instagram followers, and they're just followers in other countries that never have any opportunity to hire you, write you a check.
And that's what I mean. So
I,
you
like
could
my
have
followers to be
followers,
in monetary form.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I want Ben Franklin followers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he died a long time ago.
Name a few presidents I like to follow.
So I know you got some experiential stuff coming on. So talk to me about, obviously you had a mind shift from, you were doing these parties, right? You're on your way. At one point, did you say, hey, we need to redirect course? There's way more money in corporate, which, for those of you listening, there is way more money in corporate.
A lot of money in corporate.
You know, multi-hundred billion, you know, $10 billion companies like Spotify can spend hundreds of thousands without a blink of an eye in their marketing budget, versus an individual who's actually pulling the money out of their bank account.
Yeah. I mean, that happened, I would say, six or seven years ago.
Okay.
And again, I mean, the first clients that we had in the corporate space weren't huge, huge dollar amounts. And especially now, looking back in retrospectively, but at that time were multiples of what we were making in the wedding world. So we were like, huh, this money tree shakes differently. Let's shake this a little harder. So once we really got our footing there and saw just how much money was there, it became a big priority for us. And again, I as we were talking about before, we stepped away a little bit from the wedding and social space to really focus and see how far we could push things in the brand space. And again, I mean, this was our first year going abroad for events and seeing just how far we could go with these clients that might be based here in New York. Then, you know, clients that are based here in New York, but have bi-coastal presences, yes, or multi-market presences. And we're like, great, we can do that. So once even that amplification happened, that grew our business so, so broadly. And now this year, I mean, a big focus besides just growing that business and working with these clients in multi-markets, going international, we've taken a step back and we found this niche in the wedding and social market where, again, we're offering something that other people aren't doing, where, yes, we do a lot of floral design and we have our own really great team of florists that we work with. But we're finding these clients that want to have a wedding that's not flower focused. It's not just flowers and candles.
So the corporate's brought you back into the
social. Literally, we'll have clients that are like, I saw that party you did for Spotify, or I saw that launch party you did for the Cher show on Broadway. I saw that thing that you did for L'Oreal, and that's what I want. And I'm like, that's fucking cool. I love being able to do something that's really outside of the box and bringing in these different multi-sensory things that aren't just flower based. So
drop an example for me.
We did. Hi, Katie. We did this really great wedding maybe a month ago at the Museum of the City of New York. Cool. And the bride was such, like, she's got killer style. She works at Philip Lim. So she's like hashtag fashion, you know? But she was one of those brides. It was like, I've seen your brand work and that's what I want for my wedding. They did City Hall on Friday and did kind of like a, you know, smaller family lunch at the Yale Club and did the more kind of contained traditional-ish thing. But then Saturday at the museum, she was like, I'm a color girl. I love color. So where we landed was this color-blocked cocktail party where, you know, this wing of the museum was like pink, like saturated pink lighting, pink flowers that we deemed like cool girl flowers, like kind of like fashion editorial and feel. Did these great vinyls that looked like paint spilling over the bars and the food displays. So it just looked like this was like a cool brand party. This wing on the other side was like yellow. It's like sunshine yellow, same thing, like just a wash of yellow, yellow flowers, yellow furniture, yellow disco balls. In the middle was blue and did this crazy like balloon installation and disco balls. And it just was like, it was just so cool and editorial and different and didn't look like anything else in our portfolio. And I was like, this is our ideal wedding client because they had great taste. They had the budget to support that taste.
Taste and budget is, you know.
Taste and budget is a great Venn diagram for us. And they just let us really play. And, you know, it's one of those things that her parents, who were super, super sweet, they were very involved. And admittedly, they'd be like, we don't quite get this. And the first daughter, you know, had kind of a more traditional, like Hamptons wedding that was, you know, like neutrals and greens and whites, totally different universe. And they're like, Katie's always been our wild child. We don't quite get her, but she's got great taste. So we're going to like let her go crazy. And it was so much fun. It was just a really fun wedding to be a part of and to think about and about in a different way that wasn't just like, what do the flowers on the tables look like? And what do the candle holders look like? So we want more and more and more of that. I'm excited to like show the world that one.
For those though that are looking to get more in the corporate space, right? Mm-hmm. So the pitch to a client, let's say L'Oreal, versus pitch to a bride, obviously must be very different.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
So give me like the framework of what that looks like when you're pitching L'Oreal.
Yes and no. I mean, we attract a certain kind of bride and groom where a lot of our clients tend to be a little bit older. We get a lot of working professionals that maybe aren't, you know, depending on mom and dad to pay for it. This is their money.
Sure.
So we actually do get a lot of brides and grooms that are really interested in our process and what that system looks like, not just the output. They might get hooked by it. Mm-hmm. They might see our portfolio, but they're really interested in how we work and what the mechanics of that are. I would say for our corporate and brand clients, I mean, again, like our portfolio is one thing and that's one selling proposition. But when we send out proposals and when we're doing these decks for clients, a lot of times we don't actually show a ton of creative work. Most of our slides are like, this is what our timelines look like. This is what, if we're doing venue scouting, this is what that document looks like. This is how we get from this kernel of an idea to the rendering, to the real life, what happens and manifests itself. And that's what clients are buying. They want to know what that relationship with us looks like, not so much what the final outcome looks like. Because I kind of like already is sold in.
Yeah, I mean, they know what the work is. Yeah. At that point, it's how they want to know how you're getting.
Exactly. And again, we're big on no surprises. I always say no surprises with our clients. There might be good surprises. You might show up and there's like extra stuff there.
Sure.
But I never want a client to walk in and be like, oh shit, I didn't know that that was what
that wall was going to look like.
Or I didn't know that that table was going to be there. Why is that thing? So again, we're super buttoned up and we like to be over communicative, not in a way that like overcomplicates things or confuses people,
but
we want our clients, like if they needed to look back and reference something, they could look back at decks and binders and be like, oh yeah, that was there. I proved it. That was there.
So the first thing that comes to mind too, as we're talking about this, and we just talked about running a business and making money, right? When you price these jobs out, do you over budget the amount of time initially in your quote? So let's say you go into an event.
Yeah.
L'Oreal's hiring you on to do a massive product launch release, right? And you quote them, we'll throw out a number. Let's say it's $10,000 for you to do this project, right? But you know, oh shit, man, what if, it might cost me $9,500 and you only make $500. You know what I mean? Like, how do you come about that?
Yeah.
Where do you sit down and strategize and say, hey, we might be going in for hundreds of hours on this project.
Yeah.
And then allow some buffer from, you know, what it actually may take. And then, you know, because you can't go back to them and go, hey, listen, guys, I didn't sleep the past 72 hours. Can you tack on another 20,000? So a lot of times, you know, that might not be very well received when you're saying, oh, it's my labor that we're over budget on. So how do you kind of, I mean, obviously knowledge from doing it previously.
Yeah. I mean, we're luckily at a point where we've done so many permutations of events that we just know what type of labor, both from like a management standpoint and then the actual doing of the doing and production it takes. So, I mean, our team is equipped now to recall, to be like, I know that job cost us this amount, or we charged this and we should have charged this.
Yes.
So, you know, it's not a surprise or not fuzzy math when we do it. I mean, every now and again, a client surprises you, and certain clients need a lot of handholding or need a lot of time. We actually don't at this point charge by like time commitments in the way of like, you know, tracking our hours.
Sure.
But we, again, it's kind of, you know, we just know that based on the material cost, based on like salaries of the people that touch this given event, or if it's different professionals that we're bringing in, if we know that it's super complex and our accountant or our bookkeeper is going to have to be super hands-on, then we charge accordingly for that.
Of course. Yeah. Because you might be now, as you build out these massive events, there's so many moving pieces.
Yeah, like paying all the vendors out and making sure that like our accounting is really, really right.
And making money for you and your three partners and covering payroll, insurance.
Just, you know, that.
Like all those things that people forget about.
Totally.
Like 401k contributions.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Again, like
health insurance and
the wonderful massive cost of health insurance right now. But there's all those things that factor into making, you know, a profit.
Yeah.
Bottom line is making profit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough too. I mean, I would say less in the corporate world, more in the social world. Sometimes we'll have clients that we have to, again, educate them on why we charge what we charge. And I would say what we found out even is the way that we charge in our pricing models, maybe a little bit different than how it's standardly built in this industry. But that education of like, great, you know, we charge X amount for, you know, candles. It's always candles. It's always candles because people are like, I can find it on Amazon Prime. And that's such a weird pain point, but it's always candles. But, you know, explaining that, yes, you as a human, Anthony, my groom, could buy candles on Amazon Prime, but for this to be part of the holistic picture and for us to track it and who's unpacking the candle and putting it in the other candle thing is why we charge charge.
Because every candle has to be touched by a human hand that has to be put in a vase and then lit. And that is actually labor, which has a hard cost. Yeah, and people think that, you know, Amazon just drops them off. Listen, if you can get the delivery guy to stay and set up, then we're, you know, and include it in the fee.
Exactly.
And which is also something too, I feel like being in the Amazon generation, people have a hard time, you know, for us, some people come in and go, your albums are really expensive. I'm like, well, they're handmade in Italy and there's a hard cost to those.
Right.
They're made on Kodak paper and they're not the shit you get off Shutterfly.
Right.
But just, there's a huge gap between those. And people don't realize, I'm like, Shutterfly's not even profitable. Like there's all these
so
things that go
factors.
in, like, the factor it, right?
Yep.
But people don't realize because they're so used to that Amazon-esque, you know, and they even at the higher end, I think sometimes people lose touch with the fact that there are hard costs to these things, and especially quality.
Yeah.
You know, there's a very hard cost to quality.
Yeah.
You can get cheap stuff, but it is just that, and it looks cheap.
Yeah. For social events, we don't do any planning. We only do design, right? So I said we act as florist plus. Mm. We do flowers, but we also do taxidermy, neon signs, mylar walls.
Taxidermy.
Tattoos, you know, whatever that those extra plus, 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 plus.
Hold on. Let's
I put a pin in that. I'm going to come back to that. Taxidermy. We've had several clients that were really, I mean, we,
so okay,
wait, to pause.
We're
don't, we okay, don't like, I'm not the one like stuffing it, but we've had clients that are really into taxidermy. So we source it's part of the decorative landscape or the environment that we're bringing. Mm. So again, it's above and beyond.
My clients were into taxes.
We got some, and I mean, high end Blue Hill Stone Barns clients. But the funny thing that
it makes sense, it fits there.
Yeah. Oh, yep. I'll show you the pictures on that one too. That was an awesome one. But you know, something that your average florist isn't. You know, capable of doing, or don't
Harvard
they, they don't have
one.
Their, you know, their taxidermy guy. I got a guy. I got a guy for everything, whatever you need. Got a guy.
Taxidermy.
So we don't do planning for social events.
So preface that. Every planner listening to this right now,
they're
not stepping on your toes.
Nope. We're your best partner. Yep. We'll make you look really good. So we also...
I think it's important to say that, though, because a lot of people automatically assume that some of the bigger event production companies are also planners, and they're not.
I like to underscore that because for a corporate and brand, we do, for the most part, do planning. So it's full service.
That's different, though.
For social.
Yes.
For social. Hey, planners, hire.
Yes.
But so with that, we don't take on clients that don't have planners because we learned the hard way that it defaults to us. And whether
and
people think that they're hiring us for planning or if they just have a lot of questions, it becomes so much work educating people on why my photographer said blah, 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 blah. Or how come the caterer is da, 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 da. Or how come I don't understand the timing of whatever. So with that... it's been really important for us to really set those boundaries to protect our scopes so that when we're just doing design, flowers, taxidermy, we can focus and be really, really, really good at those things and not have to take a beat to take a step back to educate a client on why the photographer is doing whatever. It's a tricky thing. I mean, we had one bride that was really sweet and had what seemed like a really great wedding concept in mind, but she was adamant that she didn't need a planner because she was like, I'm super organized. I've gotten all taken care of. I've got more than a year to plan this wedding. And I think a lot of times our social clients don't know what they don't know. And they don't know that, you know, in fairness, asking these questions becomes a lot of work for everyone else that's involved.
Well, people don't realize, I think, you know, as we build out these events and people hire my services, let's say, there's people I just generally don't want to work with.
Yeah.
Because A, I don't feel like bring the same level of of what we do, or B, they just suck, you know, right? And I mean, like, the vibe sucks or the energy sucks. And like, dealing with the clients is one thing, but then you got to deal with vendors who suck. It's like, no way, there's no room for that.
No.
Like, life is already stressful enough as it is. I want to go to work. I love my interior crew. I want to show up and make sure I'm with a group of people from makeup to hair to the florist.
And
everyone's cool.
It.
Yeah. But they're cool with each other.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like, I want to be able to go to you, Erica, and say, hey, I need a room shot. Like, we need the candles lit. And you and I have that understanding.
We're like, cool.
Because it's a win-win.
I got you.
Because it's a win-win. Like, you need the great picture. I need the picture for the client. You need it for your own marketing purposes.
Yeah.
And when I work with a florist who can't execute that because they haven't staffed the labor correctly, and there's a ladder in the middle of the dance floor a minute before the ballroom's about to open.
Doesn't
work. That's poor planning, man. You know, and it's like, you know, piss poor planning, you know how that goes. But that there's a level of excellence that you want to work with, and that the cream always rises to the top. And I, at this point, as I've gotten older, I've gotten way grouchier about shitty vendors.
Yeah. Yeah. No, same. I mean, again, we pride ourselves on being good to work with, and it's important to us. I mean, there's been a, you know, I always say whenever someone has negative feedback or just, you know, areas of growth, I'm like, I invite it. I never want anyone to hold it back and just kind of like be in the wings, like tinsel team, whatever. I mean, literally when we work, especially with new people, I send an email to be like, Anthony, we've never worked together. How was it? What can we do better? Cause I want to know, cause I never want to be that one vendor that you're like, I thought they were great, and then they left the goddamn ladder in the middle of the ballroom.
You know, I think for most people, though, I think it's just people just want to be greeted with a smile. Like, you have a great smile. Right. Like, no, really, I mean that. But like, the energy you bring around is cool. Like, and inherently, yeah. It's like, oh, yo, I hung out with Erica. She's fucking awesome. She's a cool person. Like, that I think supersedes everything
totally.
Else.
Totally.
Now, I think you can be an asshole, and if you're really good at something, people will deal with you. Just because you're really good or because you have an enemy. They don't like you. There's a big difference.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They have to deal with
you.
Whereas when you're genuinely a good person, people want to be around you.
Yeah.
And they want to surround themselves with that same community.
Yeah. Not just being likable, but being the problem solver. Because as we know, inevitably something will go wrong.
Of course.
If it's small or it could be big and catastrophic and that's terrifying, but something will go wrong.
Course.
So when vendors can band together and like fix it before even it's known that it's a problem, that's always the win for me. And that's when I'm like, yeah, that's my person. Like, I want to work with them.
I'm going to be vague about this, but I had someone come up to me recently and was like, hey, make sure you don't go take pictures out there. I'm like, why not? We don't have the key. Oh, cool. Now, there's like a couple of ways that plays out.
Discussion.
And I go to the bride. I'm like, nah, fuck that. We don't need pictures out there. And then that's a win, though.
Yeah.
Because we ain't getting pictures out there anyway.
Yeah.
I could burn the planner, burn the venue, burn everyone, cover my own ass.
Nah.
Instead, it was a win for the group. I was like, I got a better idea. Why don't you get me over there?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we can do that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I went to the client. I'm like, yo, look at this. You're the only one who's getting pictures.
Yeah.
Here, because no one else can.
Sell
that's
it.
Private access. And they just gave it to her. She was like, oh, shit. So it turned into like, oh my God, what's happening? To oh shit,
to
this
win,
is amazing. And it was a win for all of us.
Totally.
And now the vendors are all like, everyone was like, yo, good shit.
High five.
Yeah. But in that moment, there's vendors who would have been like, they told me we can't take pictures there because they lost the key.
Yeah. Yeah. Your planner told me.
Your planner told me and the venue can't find the key.
Yeah.
And we're all screwed.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
Just shit happens, man.
Totally. We're all building this universe together.
We are.
Yeah.
So I know you have somewhere to be today, unfortunately.
I know.
You got a business to run.
Work.
You got a business to run. So I want to be respectful of that.
Yeah.
But I do want to ask you one final question,
yeah.
if that's okay. So one piece of advice that you could give yourself from 10 years ago that you wish you would have known today.
Yeah, I love this
game. That would be
a
game changer.
I love this game. Depending on the day, I've been asked this question a few times and I answer different ways. Definitely not taking no for an answer, you know, especially when I worked for someone else and I was really afraid of stepping on toes or overstepping what my role was. If I thought I had a good idea, and I usually had a good idea because I'm really smart, but you know, if someone shut it down or was like, no, like that's not the move or that's not your place to talk about that, I'd kind of be like, okay, you know, and swallow it and, you know, do something that was, I think, smaller than what I wanted it to be. And as I've grown up and I've grown up with the business, I feel very strongly about never taking no. And my team knows this. And it's I think one of my strong suits is I always turn a no into like a maybe, but a maybe though. And figuring out why a no is a no. Like, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? Or what's the thing that's going to turn someone from like they're shut down to opening up what it is that they even need? So I don't know. That's it. It all goes back to kind of creating your own possibilities and believing in your strengths and abilities what you have to offer.
Nice.
So I don't know.
Oh, I like it.
That's it.
I think that's great. You know, and
that's
I think
it.
So many times people don't even ask.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in ask for forgiveness, not permission.
Oh, totally.
You know, like just go for it. And then, you know, what's
supposed
to somebody say, like, I got thrown out of shooting somewhere the other day. Politely, but thrown out.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
Not the key place.
Yeah, it was fine. But no, it wasn't like a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, they were like, hey, you can't do that. I'm like,
okay.
Shit.
Yeah.
They're like, did you ask? I'm like, oh, of course not.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
would I have asked so that you would have told me no?
You know, for example, we lost a contract last week. There was a big contract that we were counting on. We've been kind of.
Don't you hate that?
Sometimes.
But the universe does it for
always,
a reason.
Yeah.
Always for a reason.
I very much believe that. But literally, you know, we'd been talking to these clients for about a month and a half, and it seemed like a sure thing. And then all of a sudden, they were like, they kind of sent a nebulous email that was like, sorry, guys, we can't move forward. Thanks for your time. And I hate that kind of email.
I fucking hate those
emails. So I wrote back and I was like, hey, we'd love to jump on the phone to get some insights and some intel on like what happened. got on the phone with these clients, and they unloaded. There was this litany of things that happened internally. So it had nothing to do with us. Sure. They were like, you guys have been amazing. We were actually so embarrassed to like write to you. I understand if you never want to work with us. And I was like, it's not like that. Like, we're here. Like, I want to work with you when it's our time.
When the time's right, yeah.
But it was that bridge that went from like a no and like a maybe we'll never work together again because they were embarrassed to like, no, we're cool. And like, yeah, I've got your back. And they felt really taken care of, to now it's like, whenever it's our time, it's going to be our time. So I don't know. I believe in opening up these possibilities.
And, yeah. And I think even a loss, yeah, like depending how you look at it, or a failure, you know, I hate using those words, but
yeah,
when something bad happens, that's the greatest opportunity from growth.
Yeah,
you know, I've learned far more from failing than I have from any success
makes you
I've ever had.
Makes you resilient.
It builds moral character, fortitude, resilience. Whereas, you know, the successes are great. Everyone loves you when you're successful. You know, it's easy to love. Whereas you inherently get a lot less support when things aren't going as well. You know, and I think that's, and also too, it's an amazing way of seeing who is true to you. Right. Because when you're on top of the world, look,
who's still rooting for you?
Yeah, well, it's like, look at the athlete syndrome, you know, like when they're killing it and they're famous, they have these entourages. The second they're out of the spotlight, they're done, you know, and those are the fair weathered friends that are only with you for what you can give to them.
Right.
It's the people that are with you when you're having the bad day or when you're going through something personal that stay with you, that's the real test.
Yeah.
Right. And that you not only learn more about yourself in those moments, but you learn more about the people that you surround yourself with.
And if I may, on that note, something that we've been really committed to, and myself especially, is being honest and transparent about the hard times. It's such an easy script when people are like, how are you? Like, how's the business? And you're like, it's fine. That's good. You know, it's just rolls off that easily, and you don't want to get into like the shit that's really happening. We've been really committed to being real and being like, you know what? Like, April was really tough. April was the hardest month I've had in a long time. Now it's better.
It was social in the summer. The city this year is not great.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing great. I don't have any weddings in August.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's cool.
I'm
like,
no one sales, but I'm doing
great.
I'm
like,
okay.
They're like, I'm 20% off 2018.
Are
I'm
you?
Like, but yeah. I'm like, it's also, there's a reason.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, and people think I think this sounds crazy. 2020 is going to be the biggest year we've had in a long time.
Yeah, I feel
because
it. I feel
brides are so crazy that they like the way 20 sounds.
I know. That's true.
It's so true. You know what? It was 2010.
I literally, you know what's going to happen, Anthony? Mark my words. There's going to be a million Roaring 20s everything.
Yes.
Everything. Weddings,
no,
brands,
I agree. It's a great,
everything,
it's a great
everything, ha- everything,
people,
everything.
I've even had brides mention the hashtag.
The Art Deco, yes.
I've even had the brides use.
Oh, I know.
No, the 20 hashtag sounds better than 19.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's why you're getting married in 2020? They're like,
yeah.
And they look at me like, I'm nuts.
Like,
and I'm
what?
Like, so 2020 is going to be great. But people don't want to talk about the fact that this August in New York City is one of the
slower
August.
I'm here for talking about it.
You know, and
I'm here for talking about it.
And that's fine. Look, every business is cyclical. You think Ford doesn't have a down month in selling cars? It's like, shit, that's how the world works, you know? And that's how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my advice. Being transparent, being open, but always knowing there's opportunities. It's coming.
There's always
go
opportunities.
For it. Kill it.
Fuck yeah.
Grab it. Shake the money tree. Boom. That's it.
All right. Well, you heard it here with Erica. I want to thank you for coming on first and foremost and
my
sharing
pleasure,
your time with me and your knowledge. I'm appreciative of getting to know you. And I think it's strange we haven't connected earlier than this. But I love what you do. I love your feed. I love your vision. I love the fact that you're so far out of the box from everybody else that you've really differentiated your brand and your style and your uniqueness, and you guys own that. And I think that that's fucking awesome. And I think you guys are also true to who you are personality-wise. It reflects in your brand, where so many people are trying to be something they're not. Mm. You guys are something you are, and that shows.
Yeah.
And obviously your clients are loving it, and the industry has taken notice as well. So I think sky's the limit with you guys. And, you know, I think you'd be doing some really cool shit that far beyond what you've already done. And I want to see that. So, and you were here and it's fucking awesome. And I thank you for that. So please tell everyone where they can find you if they want to hire you. And if they just want to reach out to you, maybe someone in the industry wants just, you know, show you some love. Tell me both.
Yeah, I love it. So you can find our main website at tinseldesign.com. Tinsel spelled T-I-N-S-E-L. tinselweddings.com for our social and wedding site. And of course on Instagram, tinseldesignnyc.
Cool. Awesome. And they can reach out to you, your partners, or anyone.
I just, I Just come to me.
Drop it. All right. You heard it here. Thank you again. Cheers. Thank you for spending Monday with me.
Cheers, honey. This is amazing. Right. You're the best.
You are the best. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. Doing this has been an absolute journey and an amazing time. I have learned so much, and I want to thank you all for listening in. If you kindly would, we would just ask you for your support. If you've liked the show, if you've gained anything from it, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or any of the other platforms where you are viewing this. We would greatly appreciate it, and it means the world. Thank you so much for listening in. You can find us online at AnthonyVasquezWorkshops.com, as well as on social, on Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube at Anthony Vasquez Workshops. We look forward to seeing you there.